Welcome to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel, and I'm joined by MNN's Brent Palm, Ashley Walker, and Mike Brim. We're going to delve into what's happening in the North Star State. If it matters in Minnesota, we've got it covered. This week, legendary Gopher volleyball coach Hugh McCutcheon. Meeker County honors local Wizard of Oz actress. But first, the University of Minnesota's newest adolescent sexual health report shows while the pregnancy rate went up during COVID, it didn't mean the birth rate followed suit. MNN's Ashley Walker spoke to U of M's Director of Adolescent Sexual Health Training and Education, Jill Ferris, on what this report shows during the pandemic years of 2020 and 2021 involving youth sexual health across Minnesota.
Yeah, this year's report is really interesting because this is the first data that we have that actually comes from, that was collected during the pandemic. Our birth rate is, or the data that's collected around birth certificates is kind of 2 years behind. So the data that we are looking at this year was people who, you know, became pregnant but also gave birth in 2021. So these are people who got pregnant in 2020 and some of them also getting pregnant in 2021 and then giving birth that year. So this is really the first kind of glimpse at some of the things that we kind of have been suspecting might happen, but we didn't have the data, of course, to back it up until now. So this is, again, kind of this really interesting look at how the pandemic really affected young people's access to medical care, to contraceptive care, to access to, you know, birth control, condoms, testing, things like that. And so it's only 1 year. You know, 1 year doesn't a trend make. We'll keep our eye on things, and there's still a lot of things that we don't know, and there's still a lot of things that are unfolding. But I think all of us that work with youth and that advocate on behalf of young people have been keeping our eye on what this is going to mean for young people in their health care and their health. And it certainly seems to have had an impact in terms of the birth and pregnancy rates in Minnesota.
Yeah, as I see, the birth rate went up, which is the first time in more than a decade, correct?
So actually, it's the pregnancy rate that went up. It's a little bit confusing to understand, but the birth rate is just people who gave birth. That's it. The pregnancy rate actually includes abortion data, too, and then it also includes fetal demise over 20 weeks gestation. So basically, anytime there's a death certificate filed with the health department for somebody who lost a pregnancy when they were more than 20 weeks pregnant. So so basically, the pregnancy statistics are the birth data and the abortion data together. And what's particularly unusual about this is that the birth rate went down while the pregnancy rate went up. So what that suggests to us is that fewer young people got pregnant, but the ones that did, more of them did not carry pregnancies to term in 2021 than kind of in previous years. And so that's a really interesting trend, I think, in terms of not only folks' access to, you know, birth control and condoms and things like that during the pandemic, but certainly also people's access to abortion services and abortion-related care during the pandemic, too. And so, yeah, it's definitely something that is an interesting finding and something that we'll be keeping our eye on to see what this means kind of for future, you know, future trends as we look at this, you know, how this unfolds.
And getting to kind of the other side of the report, STIs. So it looks like there was a decrease.
There was, you know, we've seen, so the STI rate is sort of a perplexing issue because for the years before the pandemic, we just kept seeing it kind of tick upwards. Every single year we saw these slight increases. And since the pandemic, so since 2020, it's actually gone down every year. And so we've had, you know, a decrease in 2020, 2021, and in 2022. The STI data is only 1 year behind. The birth data is 2 years behind. So we've seen these declines all throughout the pandemic. And I think there's a couple things to think about here. One of them is likely the fact that there probably is more infection sort of in the population than these rates are accounting for. We're always, of course, happy to see a decrease, but I think a lot of folks are keeping their eye on this and saying, did it actually decrease or did access to testing and access to treatment actually changed during the pandemic? And I think that there's, the answer to that is undoubtedly that it did. And I also think, you know, there's probably some other things going on there with relation to, again, sort of the amount of you know, chlamydia and gonorrhea, just generally speaking in the population. And those numbers, again, they keep going down, which is a good thing. And I think there's also this sort of grain of salt that many of us are taking with it when we look at it, which is to say that these numbers are down. That's a good thing. We're happy about that. And we probably know that access to testing is also decreased during the last few years. And so that's probably also part of why these numbers are in decline as well. So again, like everything with the trend, we'll keep our eye on it and see where it goes in the future. I would like to think that, you know, in 2022, 23, 24, you know, we're coming out of the pandemic, we're bouncing back and we have access to, you know, services and supports that we didn't during the pandemic. So those numbers, I think, will remain to be seen sort of where we go with this. But it's an encouraging trend to see them on the downward, you know, swing. And we'll just hope for that to continue in, you know, future years.
Time for a quick break. More with MNN's Ashley Walker and the U of M's Jill Ferris.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Keep a little talking to, man to man, mano a mano. Hey, Steve! It's now a good time? No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org, a public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel. MNN's Ashley Walker continues her conversation with U of M's Director of Adolescent Sexual Health Training and Education, Jill Ferris, on the latest Adolescent Sexual Health Report.
I was going to ask what you think the trend is going to be for the next coming years, given the national disagreement on birth control, abortion care, and the fact that Minnesota itself is an abortion safe haven.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's such a good question. I think, you know, that is what you just said, that Minnesota is a safe haven, or, you know, that we have protected and codified the right for people to access, you know, contraceptive services as well as abortion care. I suspect that what that will mean for young people here in Minnesota is that, you know, they will have access to the health care and the supports and the services that they need. And, you know, I think when we know from lots of research and decades of looking at this issue with young people that when they have access to supports and services and medical care and testing and treatment, that, you know, that they make great decisions about their health care, and that they, you know, we see these kind of things going in, the trends go in the right direction when young people have access to services, and that when those services are, you know, culturally relevant, and that young people can get there because they have transportation and they have, the clinics are open, you know, during hours where young people can get there. So it's not just about access. Access doesn't mean anything if somebody can't, you know, get it, or, you know, access that service if it's unaffordable. So there's other things that play into it too. But I think, you know, one of the things that we are seeing and that we kind of have our eye on is that, you know, all of the states that are surrounding Minnesota are either, you know, abortion restrictions are in place, either sort of a little bit or a lot, right? Some of them have pretty severe restrictions, others sort of less severe. But all the states around us are, you know, definitely in a place where young people don't have the same access to healthcare and to services that they do in Minnesota. And I think a lot of the providers that I talk to here on the ground are kind of wondering how that all is going to affect the patients that they see here in Minnesota, where we're seeing maybe an influx of young people and just people of all ages coming from surrounding states, and people coming as far away. I mean, people are coming from very far away to access certainly abortion care, but also just medical services in Minnesota. So it's a good thing. We're happy that we have access to the care that young people need. And, you know, it perhaps might put a strain on the, you know, medical providers here in Minnesota to be able to, you know, provide that access to young people from our state, as well as, you know, surrounding states where they don't have those opportunities to access that care. We have pretty large racial and ethnic disparities and geographic disparities. We have some of the worst health disparities in the country. So I think you can't talk about you know, this issue in Minnesota or this issue among young people without also pointing out the fact that not every group or, population of young people has access to the same sort of level of services or level of resources and supports. So it's something to, you know, keep our eye on, to really hone in on and try to do better with the young people that are marginalized or have come from, you know, populations that have been underserved and under-resourced historically. So, like I said, we have racial and ethnic disparities in birth and pregnancy, but also in STIs. And actually, our disparities for sexually transmitted infections are even more stark than they are for birth and pregnancy. And then we also have really large geographic disparities. The further you get from the Twin Cities metro area, the higher the pregnancy rates and birth rates are. So in Minnesota, the top 10 counties for pregnancy and birth, all of them are quite far away from the Twin Cities, and most of them actually border other states. The further away you get from the access to services and to care, it sort of stands to reason that young people would experience more pregnancies, unwanted pregnancies, when they're unable to access, you know, birth control and condoms and just, you know, sort of adolescent-friendly healthcare. So it's something also to note that we're doing well in a lot of ways. We have the lowest birth rate we've ever had, and that is great. That is a really good trend. And we still have a lot of work to do to serve all of our young people and make sure all of them are getting the kind of quality healthcare that we know that they deserve.
Why do you think there's such a stark difference with Minnesota's STI disparity?
Well, I think that all of the health disparities that we have really stem from sort of historic and systemic inequities in, you know, our healthcare system, in our education system. A lot of these things are much, much bigger than just, you know, certainly an individual's health behavior. People are products of the environment that they live in, and things like poverty and access to education and, access to healthcare, all of those things are deeply related to the kind of health outcomes that people have. And we know that in Minnesota, our BIPOC population, our folks of color, often do not have the same access to, you know, education and services and supports that, that white people do, or that, you know, things that have been kind of traditionally created for sort of the majority population. So I think that the things around health disparities are sort of deeply tied to inequality and sort of systemic racism, systemic issues that are big. They're not easy things to solve and to fix, but there's a lot of things that are trends that are moving in the right direction in Minnesota in terms of, giving people access to, you know, housing and childcare. There's a lot of really great things happening in our state that hopefully will kind of build up the kind of just general overall health of all people, and that, you know, in turn should have the effect of reducing some of those disparities that we see that play into all kinds of health issues, not just teen pregnancy and STIs, but all kinds of other health disparities that we have in our state.
MNN's Ashley Walker visiting with U of M's Director of Adolescent Sexual Health Training and Education, Jill Ferris. More Minnesota Matters after this. Welcome back to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel. The Meeker County town of Dassel is honoring a local actress who played a munchkin in the 1939 classic movie The Wizard of Oz. MNN's Brent Palm gets a history lesson on Hildred Olson from a researcher at the Dassel History Center.
Bill Ward from the Dassel Historical Society. Thanks for joining us, Bill.
Glad to be here. It's been a fun story for Dassel.
Well, it sure has. First question for you, Bill. Tell us, who was Hildred Olson?
Hildred Olson was one of 11 children, born in 1906 here in Dassel, and she had the unique situation of there being four little people in her family, just like her, all four girls. They were her older sister, Olga, then her, Hildred, her younger sisters, Bonnie and Ethel. Four in one family is extremely unique genetically. So she grew up here in our community as one of four very little girls.
From what I understand, she died in 1958, I believe, and there was a pretty, I guess plain's not the right word to use, but there was a headstone there. And part of this effort that you spearheaded and the community got behind ended up with a new gravestone, and I'd say it's a nice monument. Some of the engraving and some of the stuff on the granite marker was beautiful. How did that all come to fruition, Bill? How did we learn more about Hildred and last weekend erect a new monument in her honor?
Well, we found the Hildred story as I was doing research on another history book and managed to include just a little bit about her experience in that history book. But we knew there was more and we kept finding more. And the more we found, the more we thought, hey, there's an interesting story here. Maybe we should do it justice and really pull it out of the weeds. So we found every bit of Hildred information we could and ended up with enough for a museum exhibit. And that was our plan. And one day I had a chance conversation with a friend of mine who is actually the manager out at the cemetery. And he said he's had people looking for the Munchkin grave, but the gravestone that she had was very small, flat to the ground and mostly covered by grass. So it was difficult to find and certainly didn't show as someone's grave who had done something significant. So his idea was maybe we should improve on that gravestone. That brought the Dassel Historical Society into play, and they said, we've got the funding to fund a gravestone. So my friend Tom Nelson did the artwork that got us going on that and got a good relationship with folks at Darwin Monument. They worked with us getting the design done, and ultimately we made the purchase, got it engraved, and last Saturday we installed it. Does show very well. It's a very nice piece.
Hey, paint a mental picture for us, Bill, because I've seen it. Tell us what it looks like. What does it have in the front? What does it say? And what's the slogan on the bottom?
Well, actually, the whole museum exhibit is based on Hildred Gets Her Star. So the top of the gravestone is the star designed similarly to that on the Hollywood Walk of Fame that the Munchkins themselves received in 2007. Unfortunately, in 2007, Hildred had been in her grave for 49 years, so she completely missed that experience. So we got her own star. That's at the top of the stone. Then there's an etching of a picture of Hildred in her Munchkin costume standing on the beginning of the yellow brick road. And the bottom says, follow the yellow brick road. We hope that in some way Hildred today knows that that work was done. I don't know how that's possible, but we're just hopeful that she's smiling down on that. Says, yeah, that's really cool.
Definitely. Hey, let's go back in history another moment, Bill. How does Hildred Olson make it from Dassel, Minnesota to being, according to you, the smallest Munchkin in the 1939 hit movie, The Wizard of Oz?
Well, Hildred, after she graduated from Dassel High School, went to work in a vaudeville act called Harvey Williams Midgets. And they actually worked all over the middle part of the United States, from Texas, Louisiana, up to Minnesota, Ohio, and into the Dakotas. And she was actually in Ohio when the Harvey Williams troupe was called and said, their MGM is looking for little people. Are you guys available? And of course, most of them were. They bought a car in Ohio and drove to California, and the rest is known history from that point. Our exhibit has quite a bit of information on their experiences out in Hollywood and how that all came together at MGM, but she was just basically in the right place at the right time. Of course, being 36 inches tall, she qualified. And that information we actually got from a book on the Munchkins by Stephen Cox. So,
and so is the Hildred Olson exhibit still on display at the museum there in Dassel?
The museum will hold that display in place through August. So there's plenty of opportunity for people to take a day trip to Dassel, dine in one of our local dining establishments, see the museum, all kinds of reasons to come out to Dassel.
How much support, how much buzz has this Hildred Olson exhibit and the new gravestone generated for Dassel?
We have already had visitors coming out. When I left the museum yesterday, there was folks in there that had come for that. And when I went down there today, there was folks in there who were there for that. We're expecting good crowds. One of the features of the exhibit is the video that was produced by Paul Johnson. And that's a 13-minute video with kind of the whole story. So if you want to make sure you've pushed the button to see the video when you come up.
Well, Bill, we greatly appreciate your time today. And I'm guessing that people that hear this on the airwaves, a few of them at least, will be inspired to come to Dassel and check out the display and Can you stop by the cemetery and see the new headstone as well?
Yes. In fact, when you go to the History Center, you will be given a brochure with a map to the headstone in the cemetery. The cemetery is literally across the street from the museum, so you can walk it if you'd like.
Thanks, Brent. Another unique connection to the Wizard of Oz. More Minnesota Matters in 60 seconds.
So you see, son, good manners are very, very important. Someday, many years from now, when you're a grown-up, you'll be a man. And when you are, you should be a gentleman. Do you want me to go through it one more time?
Yes.
Yes, please.
Yes, please.
Exactly. Always say please, thank you, you're welcome, and excuse me. Sit up straight, hold doors open for ladies. If a door's shut, then knock first. Don't burp, don't swear, don't speak with your mouth full, don't reach across people's plates, keep your elbows off the table.
What table?
And don't interrupt. While we're at it, don't stare, don't use foul language, don't call people names, but do remember people's names. Always share toys, play nice, and cover your mouth when you cough or sneeze. On the bus, give up your seat to anyone who has trouble standing. Bottom line, treat others the way you'd like to be treated. Got it?
Got it.
And stop picking your nose.
Most parenting is hard to do in just 2 minutes. But spending just 2 minutes twice a day making sure they brush their teeth is easier and could help save them from a lifetime of tooth pain. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. That's 2min2x.org. A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ag Council.
Legendary Gopher volleyball coach Hugh McCutcheon stepped away from his role as a head coach in December and is now working as an administrator in the U of M athletic department. He's a sports development coach, basically offering advice and guidance to all of the other head coaches in the department. MNN Sports Director Mike Grimm spoke with McCutcheon this month in one of the only in-depth interviews he has done since pivoting to his new role after he wrote a book titled Championship Behavior.
The book was done, so out of professional courtesy, you know, to Mark, I just was like, hey, just so you know, I wrote this book and it's coming out in a few months, you know. And he's like, all right, that sounds cool. Let's go through some of the due diligence on the university end to make sure there weren't any issues with block AMs or any of that. There was nothing there. It was all clean. And he's like, hey, would you talk me through it? And I was like, sure. So we spent a few hours going through the book, which is written to be, it's not a volleyball book, it's a sports book, but it's written to be a framework for what I call competitive excellence, but really a process of identifying an outcome goal that you want to achieve. And then how do you connect to that goal in terms of how you're going to achieve it and what behaviors you're going to acquire to support it. But then skill development, so skill acquisition, skill application, and then into this whole idea of achievement and competing as well. So I wanted it to be this kind of soup to nuts. Here's how it looks. And not that any of this is algorithmic, but certainly there should be guiding principles along the way that are driving your methods. And what I've found is that there's all this research in the space of achievement, but how it gets applied hasn't been well documented or discussed. And that was the space I was looking to fill. So to that end, we had this discussion, and Mark was like, hey, this is a thing. I mean, we could really use this in the department. And I'd already told him, and you can ask anyone. I've told people all the time. I still didn't know what I wanted to be when I grow up. I mean, that was a pretty constant theme for me. But the idea of maybe using the book as a framework for what we're doing here, at least as a starting point for discussion, was super exciting. And that led to more conversations. And then, you know, all of a sudden, it looked like that's the direction we were going in. And at that point, you know, that's when I was talking to Mark and Julie about, hey, we should at least let people know. I wasn't going to have recruits sign or even talk to recruits for 24 and 25, or maybe it was only 24 we were talking to at that point. But talk to potential student athletes about coming to Minnesota if I already knew that I wasn't going to be a part of it. That felt really disingenuous and crummy. And they were great. And they were like, look, yeah, absolutely. You can't, you know, have your career and stand for what you stood for and then all of a sudden try to lie, cheat and steal on the way out the door. And I was like, yeah, cool. I'm glad you see it that way because I don't want to do that. So that's how we kind of came to that agreement of, hey, I'm going to retire and again, retire, whatever that means, but stop coaching at the end of the year.
Right.
And then
what has the last few months been like for you now that you're not coaching a team specifically, but still involved in coaching and helping and advising and the department? I see you in the hallways and
I'm still here. First and foremost, I think the narrative of retirement was probably, I don't know if it was overplayed, but I don't think it's accurate. It's much more of a pivot than any kind of retirement. And so maybe also a narrative that might be out there is just the idea of coaching coaches, which is not accurate. Coach resource, coach advocate, for some of the younger coaches, maybe some mentorship or something like that. But at no point am I here to tell people how to do their job. They know how to do their job. I'm just trying to help them to do their job. Yeah.
But is there something, though, to be said for coaching is coaching regardless of sport? Like, obviously, you're not going to go in probably and sit with P.J. Fleck and break down, you know, the 4-3 defense.
Right.
But there are some things, certainly, that he might say, hey, how did you handle this? And can you offer me some help?
Absolutely.
And I use him as an example just because he's a high-profile coach. I'm sure all the coaches could use that, right?
No, I think what you're describing is accurate relative to this idea of coaches have to wear a lot of hats.
Yeah.
So that's a real thing. So for some coaches, it might be discussions around recruiting. For other coaches, it might be discussions around skill acquisition, practice design. For others, it might be, you know, conflict resolution on teams, or it might be about, you know, how to frame your season going forward and connect your goal to your daily intention, all that kind of stuff. So there's lots to it. And I think for me, the reason this pivot was attractive, you know, some of it had to do with this book. I think we're going to chat a little bit about that. But you know, having coached both men and women, you know, collegiately, internationally, having had these different experiences, I think it makes me a little more credible to be able to speak to you know, gymnastics or to your point, to football. I mean, just you know, I've been in a volleyball lane, but I've been in all the lanes of volleyball, and so I think that affords me maybe a little more transfer when I have these conversations with other coaches.
Yeah, and have you had any unique ones, like since you've started this, that you'd want to share that you thought, man, that's pretty cool that we're able to connect and maybe help a little bit?
Well, I think there's been a lot of that. And yeah, not to get into specifics, but that idea of being able to help coaches, I just remember myself at times feeling like you're on an island. You know, that there's, first of all, you know, coaching in and of itself is – It's a complicated job, but there isn't a ton of academic rigor around it. So there's not people that have a ton of, you know, a degree in coaching that go into coach. You know, not that, you know, all business majors go into business, but there's certainly a lot of tradition in coaching. You tend to, whatever, parent the way you're parented. You tend to coach the way you were coached. And in that time between maybe when you were an athlete and now you're a coach, there's a ton of best practice research that you could be drawing from or you know, other information from other sources that you could be pulling into your method that could help you to get through stuff. But because there's no professional development, right? It's not like we go on sabbatical because you've got to recruit the next year and be ready for the next season. So there's none of that. There isn't this academic preparation. And then also you're in this weird thing where you're trying to do the best you can and you're going to be judged by your outcomes publicly anyway.
That's Gopher Athletics Administrator Hugh McCutcheon with MNN Sports Director Mike Grimm. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Minnesota Matters. Be sure to join us again next week on this MNN affiliate station, same time, same place. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Tasha Radel.